And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. That would be Alabama. I'm talking about from way down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. I'm going to number one of the Triple Dipper. So the situation in Austin, Texas, and this dates back a couple years, right? It was July of 2020. Actually, that's 2.5 years. So July of 2020, you guys all remember the situation we were seeing in multiple venues across the United States where Black Lives Matter riots in the wake of the George Floyd incident were just, you know, sometimes they were peaceful, largely they were not. And whole city blocks were getting burned. And you had, in certain venues, they did not put up with it, like in Florida. Ain't going to happen here. But then you had like in Portland or in San Francisco or in, you know, Oakland or in, Austin, Texas, where the riots went on every night. And at times they got violent. And like I said, there was looting, there was burning, there was crime committed. You had instigators that would come in from out of state to help, you know, set these things up and provoke people to do more. It was a mess. And, you know, we'll never forget the ridiculous assertion by what I believe was a CNN reporter in front of a burning building in Atlanta saying, "What are largely peaceful protests?" And the world was like, "Come on, man, quit trying to gaslight us. You're standing in front of a freaking burning building. Nothing to see here." Meanwhile, in Austin, Texas, an Army sergeant was off duty. Now, I understand that he was not supposed to be in Austin because he didn't have a pass to allow him to go that far off post. But nonetheless, E5 Sergeant Daniel Perry, a veteran of Afghanistan, I took a look at some of these information about his record that I could find. We understand he was an E5 sergeant. I believe he had 9 years of service, a tour of duty in Afghanistan. He was assigned to the 1st Cavalry Division. He was an infantry soldier. So, yeah, he was not somebody who had, you know, no experience at all handling weapons. Even just as a basic infantry soldier, you still have more training with weapons than the average citizen. And you can imagine a lot of those guys, you know, in their off-duty, guns are still a thing for them. And so he obviously was carrying a .357 Magnum, which is not Army issue, so he was familiar with another type of weapon than what his normal sidearm or long gun would have been on duty. That being said, shouldn't have been there. He shouldn't have been there. Shouldn't have been there. You know, old school saying is Joe's going to do what Joe's going to do. Well, yeah. Well, Joe got off post and he was making money as an Uber driver. And he apparently rounded a corner and came right into the middle of a BLM, you know, riot. There was a huge gathering downtown. They surrounded his car. The story is they surrounded his car. They began pounding on his car. And one of those pounding on his car was a guy by the name of Garrett Foster. Garrett Foster, we're told, was actually an Air Force veteran. I don't know how long he had been in, 4 years, I think. I don't know what he did. But he had been in the service for some period of time. Garrett Foster had been coming down to these BLM riots night after night after night. Garrett Foster had a fiance who was a young lady who was actually an amputee, I think a quadruple amputee. And so he brought her down in her wheelchair, and they would stay out there at the protests, and he had a habit of coming with his AK-47 slung over his shoulder. Like, that's a good idea. "Here's an idea, honey. You're in a wheelchair and can't move fast. Let's go down to the riots, and I'll bring my AK-47. That was an unwise decision. I mean, how many layers of stupid can you find in that? And I hate it because he's dead, but you got to look at that and go, first of all, Daniel Perry, you shouldn't have been off post, that far off post anyway. I know you're trying to make money. E5s don't make a lot, but you weren't supposed to be there without a pass, and apparently he didn't have one. So there's an automatic, you know, reprimand from his hire. But he does it anyway, driving for Uber in his spare time, making a little money. I get it. But he shouldn't have been there. And then Garrett Foster shouldn't have been there. Dude's walking around pushing a wheelchair, carrying an AK-47, and when a guy he doesn't know pulls into the crowd, Garrett Foster decides it's going to be a good idea to assert himself. Now, some witnesses say he never pointed his rifle. photographic evidence at the scene indicates that he did. All we know is Daniel Perry said, "I had a second to think what to do." What was he trained to do? He was trained to respond. He was trained, and he was armed, and he was, by the way, carrying lawfully for protection, and he had a .357 Magnum, and the Texas law says stand your ground can imply your car as well. And so as the AK-47 was pointed in his driver's side window, Garrett Foster was shot and killed by Daniel Perry, who was staring down the barrel of Garrett Foster's AK-47. What a chaotic night. What a night full of bad decisions. I'm giving you sort of the rundown here. We're going to talk about it in more detail. But the minute the shooting happened, Daniel Perry, and nobody contests this, he pushed his way, drove his way through the crowd, got away, found a safe place, and immediately called 911 and turned himself into authorities. Body cam from the arresting officer has him saying, "He pointed an AK-47 at me. I didn't know what to do." I'll tell you more about that in a minute. But then on top of that, then you've got to look at it in even more detail. When he came into the crowd, what was his intent? Well, we have stories that several weeks prior, there were text messages between Daniel Perry and one of his friends. And Daniel Perry was saying a lot of things happening down there in Austin, that kind of stuff, talking about the crowds and the riots and saying, you know, in Texas, you can shoot one of those rioters if you have to. That doesn't look good. That also does not prove criminal intent. Something you said to your friend on an Army installation where you talk about guns and danger 2 weeks prior does not mean that you went down there with the intent to drive into a crowd and shoot somebody and alter the course of your entire life. Anybody who believes that this was his intent has to detach themselves from the reality that he had a viable career that he had not planned on ending, that he had 9 years of service to include a tour of duty overseas, and that while some people may say, well, that could have been leaving scars, PTSD made him do it. No, let's be honest. The truth is, he had earned sergeant stripes. He was somebody who had been there, done a little of that. And in the course of this, do you really think that a guy who is determined to make more out of his life because he's willing to go off post and drive an Uber at night is going to run downtown and say, "Who can I shoot tonight?" How does that stand up under the common sense rule? But yet, the detective who investigated the case chose not to arrest him. The detective who investigated the case chose not to even charge him. His chain of command did not find anything there to pursue in terms of, you know, violent crime. In fact, what I just found out right before the break, before I got back from the break, was that he actually was still on active duty during the trial. He only came off active duty once the civilian felony conviction went into place last Friday. So now you got a guy who has served his country for 9 years, earned sergeant stripes. He was an infantry soldier. He was off post. He was further off post than he should have been. But there are people who believe he drove downtown Austin just to find someone to kill. He, on the other hand, says, and the photographic evidence seems to support, and the detective believed, that no, there was not something there to bring to charges. And yet, another Soros-backed district attorney decided to pursue it. Another liberal Soros-backed district attorney decided this was where he was going to hang his hat. And so he went to a grand jury, and he presented a version of the facts that got an indictment. And last Friday, he got a conviction. Took 2 days for the jury to deliberate. In other words, it was not an easy deliberation. They didn't just go back there, deliberate, pick a foreman, and be done. No. 2 full days of deliberation, they came back with a conviction. And that's where we pick it up now. So let's look at a few things here. You know, some are questioning, too, by the way, so did he rush the crowd? Did the crowd feel threatened? Were they thinking he was trying to drive into the crowd to do them harm? Was anybody harmed when he drove into the crowd? I mean, I'm pretty sure that he didn't drive into the crowd guns blazing. If his intent was to mow people down, that would have already happened before the shots were fired, right? Did it? No. In fact, what they found was surveillance video of the scene showed him rounding a corner, seeing the crowd and slowing down, and then the crowd massed around his vehicle. Oh, okay. So it wasn't that. Because don't you think if his intent was to go down there and do harm to protesters, why wait until one points a gun at you? Maybe, just maybe, he could have done all the harm he'd wanted to and sped right on through and just tried to make it back to post and explain the scars on his vehicle. Nope. He rounded a corner, slowed down, came to a stop. They surrounded his vehicle, and then they began to beat on his vehicle, yelling at him. And then one of them, carrying an AK-47, and nobody denies it, points the weapon through the, or at the, actually, I take it back. There's also one place where it's admitted that the deceased, Garrett Foster, yelled at him to roll his window down, at which point the guy who they're accusing of murder now literally began to roll his window down, thinking that maybe this guy just wanted to talk to him and say, back out this way or something. No. At that point, the weapon came up, and all of a sudden, Sergeant Perry says he had no choice, and he fired rounds into Garrett Foster at point-blank range. And I ask you, what would you do? I mean, what would you do? You round a corner in the dark of night, you got nobody with you, and you suddenly find yourself surrounded by a mob, and they're beating on your car, and one of them has a loaded AK-47, which, by the way, he had a full 30-round clip, and the weapon was chambered, and, oh, by the way, he had 90 more rounds in his backpack. He didn't go down there saying, you know, 30 rounds just so I can disengage. No. Old boy was prepared for a standoff fight. What a knucklehead, carrying an AK-47 to a riot. All of this is going on, and the detective thinks there's nothing there to arrest Daniel Perry for. The military thinks there's nothing there to arrest Daniel Perry for, and this liberal DA gets him indicted, and now he's charged with murder. Well, there's more to the story. And look, y'all, I want to hear what y'all think. What would you do? I had a conversation with Charlene. I want to hear you, Minute Boomer, after the break. What would you do? But I was talking to Charlene. I said, baby, if you ever find yourself in that situation, here's what I think you ought to do. We'll talk about that too when we get back. I just think it's worth talking about. I mean, what a sad thing to have to talk about. But we'll see. There's reason to believe that Sergeant Daniel Perry may get his life back. We'll talk about it in a minute. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. Mob Rule. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. I'm looking at the text lines real quick before I go to the phones, and I'm seeing Brian from Huntsville is dinging me. He says, Colonel, did you just say clip instead of magazine, sir? Did I? I don't know. jumping over to the phones real quick, I'll take them in the order they came in. Line one, Jeff from Indiana. Jeff Rowe, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Phil.
Good. What's on your mind?
Hey, if you drive into a mob, you know, and they're sitting there banging on your car and everything, you're fearing for your life, and some guy pulls a gun on you, he's going to die. I mean, because if you pull a gun on anybody, you better be prepared to either pull the trigger or die.
Especially in Texas or Alabama.
Yeah, exactly. If this would have been a cop, would they have charged the cop with that? I mean, you know, if you pull a gun on a cop, he's automatically going to shoot you. I mean, I don't care. Yeah, that's his training, you know. So I don't feel sorry for it. In fact, the guy, by killing some guy with an AK-47 looking for trouble, he might have saved some lives.
Well, there's that thought. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, something that I hadn't even said yet, too, Jeff, is somebody else had a gun because the shots, Garrett Foster, the guy who died, he never fired a shot. He pulled his weapon up, apparently, got shot by Daniel Perry. And then apparently another protester was close by, shot back at Daniel Perry. So there's somebody else in there with a weapon. And so you got multiple armed rioters, and you got Daniel Perry, who's a infantryman with a stellar career, and he's the one convicted of murder. It's amazing.
Exactly. Like I say, when you're in a situation like that and you're looking for trouble, you may find it.
Yeah.
And apparently he found it.
Yeah.
Also on the Louisville shooting today.
Yeah.
It just goes to show you what happens whenever you're, I'm sure their policy is no firearms in the building or whatever. And that just kind of goes to show you that you're sitting ducks whenever you have that kind of policy. You know, more people that are armed, the better. And people have a hard time getting that through their heads. But, when one person, I guess apparently blows the window out and walks in, he's shooting fish in a barrel.
And
the fish can't shoot back.
So he was also, by the way, if you know the answer to this question, tell me real quick. But one report I saw said that he was an employee or a former employee of the bank. Do you know?
As far as I heard, it was an actual employee of the bank and everything. I used to bank at Old National, not that branch, but we had one in town there. And old guy, I know he always carried a six shooter on his hip there and everything, and he'd walk into the bank, no problem. Every day, every time he had to go to the bank, whatever, he'd walk in there armed, and nobody said a word to him.
Wow. Well, yeah, we'll watch how that one unfolds. Hey, I got another call on the line. Jeff, let me run get it real quick, all right? Take care, buddy. Line two, Colin from Decatur. How you doing, man?
Hey, Phil, I'm doing all right. My message was a bit too long to text in, but former law enforcement, prison riots, city riots, had experience with those. And I can tell you, even if I didn't have my law enforcement experience, it would be the same thing if I came around the corner into a riot. Like, not that I would go somewhere where people have been rioting actively for days, but if I just came around the corner and it was happening, you put a gun in my face, you've made it either you're going home or I'm going home, and I got people that count on me.
Good point. Hey, Colin, thanks for your call, but thanks also for your service. Appreciate you. And I think your point's well taken, man. It's a stand your ground law for a reason. But yeah, thanks, Colin. Appreciate you, man. Looking over at the I must have said clip. I'm getting dinged by my Second Amendment brethren out there. Dwight from Decatur just texted in and said, full semi-auto clip mag. And I'm like, God, jeez. Wow. Okay, let's be clear. A magazine-fed weapon is what was being toted. And he had additional magazines. Oh, my gosh. All right, Kimball from Harvest also texted in and said, I would also ask if an on-duty police officer firing in self-defense while staring down the barrel of an AK-47 would be justified in shooting. I'm certain an investigation lasting a day or two would justify a cop. The same standard should apply to a private citizen.
Mm.
Point taken. Your thoughts, though, Boomer? I mean, what? So, listen, let me ask you this. If McQueen was headed downtown and there had been off and on trouble and you knew she had to go down there for whatever reason, what would you say? Listen, if you pass if you're around a corner and there's a mob, what are you going to tell her to do?
Well, first off, McQueen doesn't necessarily like shooting guns. And,
yeah.
So she's very timid on that. So she probably would not have one on her at the time, unfortunately. But what I would tell her to do, if that would happen, I'd be first. If you round a corner and you see a mob, back up as quick as you can.
Yeah.
If that doesn't happen and the mob surrounds you, hey, start going.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Just start moving. I mean, I think you and I were just chatting just right. We were just chatting in the break about that. I'm not saying take them out with your car. I'm just saying move.
Sacrifice the vehicle.
I mean,
if you're like worried, well, they're already banging your car anyway. If they're banging on your car and scratching it up and doing things, I agree, man. And it doesn't mean you have to gun it and take them all out. No pun intended. But I mean, I'm saying you don't have to like suddenly, go speed racer on them and just take out bodies. But what I'm saying is you start edging forward. They can't stop the momentum of your vehicle. If they try to block it with another vehicle, then ram that other vehicle.
Right.
Just go ahead. Do what it takes to get out of that spot. Deal with the aftermath later.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Ooh. More on this, a lot more on this, because elected officials at every level, to include the governor, have now gotten involved. We'll come back and talk about it. Mob rule. What are your thoughts? Text it in, 833-687-4448. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And yep, like that dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Hour number two. How is it hour number two?
I was just thinking that.
I
was like, didn't you just finish your monologue?
I'm like, what the heck, man?
There's some days it goes fast, yeah. And then there's some days it goes blistering fast.
Like, I think we're on a blistering day.
Yeah.
Like speed wrinkles on the side. It's like flying in a Huey with the doors open, man. We're just feeling the wind go by. But, hey, Boomer, by the way, earlier that comment you made about watching the Masters, did you say you were kind of dozing off watching the Masters?
Yeah, dozing off watching the Masters.
So Steve from Madison.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, my stepdad. Steve from Madison has texted in and said, tell Boomer on Saturday afternoon this 80-year young man was driving around in his new Cobra, not falling asleep watching the Masters.
Duly noted.
You were old before your time.
There we go.
Okay. hey, I got some other texts here. Let's see what's going on. So Brandy from Athens texted in, says, with regard to the topic we're on right now, mob rule. She says, if I'm surrounded by a mob and they're banging in my car, I am definitely not in fear for my life and technically being held hostage. I will lay on the horn and start moving. Pull a gun on me, and now I'm going home and you're going in a body bag. How about that? Brandy from Athens does not play. She's also pretty good at the bracket, too, by the way.
Yeah.
John from Huntsville. Phil, if I was in that situation, I would pray to my Lord and Savior to protect me, and then I would pull out a paintball gun that looks like the baddest machine gun you've ever seen, loaded up with the bloodiest, reddest paintballs you've ever seen, and once that blood-red paint starts... Okay, he's thought about this too much. John, there's a little too much forethought in this one, man. So as he says, if that doesn't back off, then I'm initiating Plan B. Which is pedal to the metal.
He did think it through.
He did. He sat there and thought this through and then sent me that text. Jeff from Indiana says, on the mob shooting, by the way, I heard it's the prosecutor had exculpatory evidence and it wasn't presented. So that's why this guy was convicted. The governor has every right to overturn a false conviction. Point taken, yes. And I don't know for a fact what exactly the exculpatory evidence was. For those who don't know, exculpatory evidence is evidence that might mitigate the claims or charges made against someone. A grand jury is not required to hear all the exculpatory evidence. However, a good DA, a good prosecutor, is going to want to know they got an indictment that they can stand by in court. So you present as much, you present as clear a picture as possible. Now, granted, you're presenting it from the prosecutor's side because it's not like an evidence, you know, like a back and forth defense gets to have its say or whatever. But what I'm told is the Texas grand jury was not presented with the clear understanding of what the Texas Stand Your Ground law allows. I think something else that I would bet was not presented was the Texas grand jury in the context of Stand Your Ground has to also consider what it means to be a trained combat veteran infantry soldier. Maybe you got some reaction times and some willingness to, you know, carry a firearm that you'll pull a trigger on a little quicker than the average bear. You know what I'm saying? Frank from Madison says, how about anybody over 25 with a Social Security number ending in 3, 6, or 9 mandatory carry? 1/3 of the adults in any venue is then toting. I like it. That sounds like the Kennesaw Law. You ever heard about the Kennesaw Law, Boomer? Ever told you that?
Kennesaw Law.
Kennesaw, Georgia. You can go back and look it up. Kennesaw, Georgia, I want to say in the 80s, passed a mandatory city ordinance that every house will have a firearm. I don't know how they enforce that. The crime went way down in Kennesaw, Georgia.
Oh, I'm sure everybody knows there's going to be a firearm there.
Exactly right. Every ne'er-do-well think about crawling through a window in the dark of night has to realize, this one may be armed. Oh, by the way, they're all armed.
They're all armed.
Yeah, yeah. Brian from Huntsville says, Boomer, the 80-year-old in the Cobra was calling you subpar. Nice.
I understand.
That's nice. A little golf joke there for you.
Yeah, subpar.
Just dissing you with the golf joke. And then I got one here. Let's see what we got here. Steve from Huntsville, and I'm trying to figure, he says, the Uber driver shooting in Texas, the old saying, better judge by 12 than carry by 6 is appropriate.
Ooh.
You know what? There you go. Mm. Great point. His point is this. If you are in fear of your life, if you sit there and reason with yourself, okay, he's pointing the AK-47 at me. Do I, don't I? Do I shoot now? Do I wait to see if he shoots at me? Do I feel like I'm really in danger? What will the law say? Will I have to go to trial? How about this? You won't go to trial at all if you're dead. So his point, Steve from Huntsville, great point. He says that Uber driver better be judged by 12 people on a jury than to be carried by 6 pallbearers. I want to write that down somewhere. So here's the deal. Running through a number of articles, and we'll take this topic to the bottom of the hour probably. The lead detective in the case was a guy named David Fugit, who had a 30-year career as an investigator, was called by some to be one of the best detectives in all of Austin, Texas. He's now retired, and he works for the Attorney General's office. He testified, according to an article in The Statesman just last Wednesday, that he did not arrest Daniel Perry the night the Army sergeant fatally shot Garrett Foster because an argument could easily be made that it was in self-defense. He said, I felt I needed to do more investigation. And he says, too, that the final witness in the eight, he was a final witness in the eight-day trial. He testified Wednesday as a defense witness because, in the end, his investigation indicated to him this was indeed a stand-your-ground issue. Detective Fugit also said, there was a photo taken by a witness at the protest that shows Foster, the dead guy, with a raised AK-47 rifle standing at Perry's car door. A defense witness showed a 3D representation. In other words, they had an expert come in, did a 3D, because what happened was apparently Garrett Foster was standing there. His arms were in a I'm holding a firearm in the ready position kind of stance, and he was bladed down towards the door. In other words, he was leaning in like he had his weapon at the ready, pointing it at the car. However, another rioter was standing there blocking the view of what was in his arms, but everybody knows he had an AK-47. The position he's in says, I'm holding my firearm at the ready, but the protester was standing in the way of the camera. So basically an artistic rendering was created in a 3D image so they could spin it around a court, look at it from different angles, and it indicated that the guy was probably carrying his AK and pointing it at the window. All right, all that to say, this detective, he didn't think he had an intentional crime. Keep in mind, that's what you have to prove with the conviction that he got. You have to prove not just that the crime occurred, you have to prove the intent of the shooter. He said a witness testified that Perry maneuvered around other cars on 4th Street before making a right turn onto Congress Street was wrong. There was a video shot from a nearby building that showed that Perry did not do that. Witnesses said Perry accelerated when he made the turn onto Congress. The video showed, no, he slowed down. He also said Perry left no skid marks or tire marks at the scene. In other words, he didn't speed through the crowd. He didn't slam on his brakes, freak everybody out, and then go running them over. None of that was. So witnesses are saying things that aren't adding up to other parts of the scenario, and yet the grand jury is just going with the witnesses who say he didn't really point his weapon at him. Senior Austin Officer Brent Cleveland also said during Perry's trial that Foster was visibly upset and not receptive. Foster, the dead guy, was visibly and verbally not receptive to police telling him to quit pointing his weapon. He wasn't carrying it well, they felt like. And they had told him multiple times, you're allowed to open carry, sir, but you need to stop carrying your weapon that way. It could be seen as provocative. And he blew him off every time. And that had happened on multiple occasions. Daniel Perry said in his 911 call, he aimed an AK-47 at me. I didn't know what to do. I made a wrong turn. I panicked. He said he didn't know there were protesters downtown that night. A witness earlier in the week showed social media posts that showed that Perry had said he might be able to kill protesters if they attacked him. That's no different than us sitting here on the radio talking right now. That's us saying, man, if you're in that situation, what are you allowed to do? I think you're allowed to do this, that, and the other. Okay. Well, he had a conversation like that by text message with a friend. He told the friend, I think in Texas you'd be allowed to shoot him, or something like that. Perry told the officers in the video that he rolled his window down because he thought that guy, Foster, the dead guy, was trying to talk to him. I didn't know he was going to aim it at me, Perry said. I thought he was going to kill me. I've never been so scared in my life, and I've been to Afghanistan. Those are his words when he met with the police. Well, it's pointed out right now by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick of Texas that what we've got is a district attorney who was another one of the George Soros-funded DAs across the country in the big blue cities. Keep in mind, it may be Texas, but Austin is a notoriously liberal pocket. Just like Birmingham is liberal in the middle of Alabama, Austin is a very liberal bastion in the middle of Texas. And this DA got elected using money from George Soros to do so. And it boggles the mind that we're in this position. And then you look at what's happening with the Attorney General. The Attorney General of the state is calling this basically a right to self-defense and not a crime. Here's the actual Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton said, quote, self-defense is a God-given right, not a crime. Unfortunately, the Soros-backed DA in Travis County cares more about the radical agenda of dangerous Antifa and BLM mobs than justice. There's that. And then this one. You know, and I put a tweet out about this just the other day, right after the verdict came out, and then we heard back immediately. I told Charlene at the time, I said, the governor's got to get involved in this one. Texas Governor Greg Abbott. He says he is very interested right now in trying to obtain a pardon, to try and get a pardon put in place. Governor Abbott says he's requested the Texas Board of Pardons and Paroles to approve a pardon, which is required before the governor may grant one. In other words, he can't do it willy-nilly. He has to have something that would be meeting a level of approval by the Board of Pardons and Paroles. There has to be what they call evidence of innocence, and that has to be approved by 2 out of 3 trial officials. In other words, you have to have 2 of the 3, a judge, a district attorney, a sheriff, and a police chief in that area. We're not going to get the judge, I would think. We're definitely not getting the DA. It's going to come down to the sheriff and the police chief as to how they feel. I will tell you this, this article from NBC, here's what I found out about the Army career. It says, Perry's stint in the Army will now end as a result of the conviction, his attorney Clint Brody said. Daniel was most crushed that his conviction will end his Army service, the lawyer said. He loved being a soldier for our country. He had remained on active duty during his prosecution. He had been reassigned to duty at Fort Wainwright, Alaska, according to the publication Stars and Stripes. So he was still on active duty. He came off active duty immediately upon conviction. Lastly, I will say this and then go to a break. But that DA, he believes it's a miscarriage of justice for any governor to get involved, which tells me he doesn't understand the processes. His words are this. He says, in this case, a jury of 12 listened to testimony for 2 weeks, upending their own lives to painstakingly evaluate the evidence and the arguments presented by both the state and the defense. They heard from witnesses, blah, blah, blah. He goes on to say they reached a unanimous decision. He says, in our legal system, a jury gets to decide whether a defendant is guilty or innocent, not the governor. He's wrong. There's a reason why governors are allowed to commute sentences. There's a reason why governors are allowed to issue pardons. It's because of situations like this. Because sometimes, there are moments in time where you realize that for the greater good, you may have to get involved, or for that matter, for mercy. And that's why governors are allowed to do what they do by law, District Attorney Garza. All right, I'll tell you what, boom shakalaka, take us to the break. We'll do that right now. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. Got a few more texts we'll check on and kind of wrap this topic up. But if you got something you want to say or if you want to text it in, 833-687-4448. What would you do? You drive around the corner, a mob surrounds your car, starts beating on it. What do you do? Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Making it cool to be a conservative. Got a couple of text messages here. Let's see what we got. Our buddy Samah, the truck driver, he says, with regards to shootings and all that, he says, yeah, try a shootout at a truck stop. pretty sure he's saying it would go badly for the bad guy. Marcus from Huntsville has texted in. He says, if I turn a corner and a mob starts damaging my vehicle, the vehicle I use to get back and forth to work to support my family, they're going to find themselves in the worst game of Red Rover they could ever imagine. That's nice. John from Tanner says this: I think a lot of the folks texting in that they would shoot have never had to take another human life. Not as easy as they're making out to be. No, John, I don't want to denigrate the folks who say they would shoot back if they had to. I'll be honest with you. It's not easy. It's not supposed to be easy. It should never be easy. I don't care how many times you've done it, it's not easy. But shooting in self-defense is a whole lot different than someone who is shooting otherwise. And the question here is, if it means saving your own life, limb, or property, would you? How do you feel about Daniel Perry, the sergeant, the Army sergeant? And I said it earlier, he was not supposed to be down there. He did not have a pass to let him drive from Fort Hood down to Austin to do an Uber run that night. He was making extra money on the side. I get it. But the truth be told, he was not supposed to be there. Had he been following orders, staying in line with the SOPs of his unit, he would have either had a pass or he would not have gone at all. So there's that. But then again, you also look at this Garrett Foster guy, the one who died. How much sense did it make for him to be down there with an AK-47 and four loaded magazines? And by the way, a round was chambered. He wasn't playing either. He was down there, and look at the levels of lack of wisdom here. Garrett Foster is down there, allegedly, with his fiance, who is a quadruple amputee, who's in a wheelchair. And he's pushing her in the middle of a riot while toting an AK-47 and four magazines full of rounds. I'm assuming it's 7.62, which is a heavy round. And he's just down there because he's sightseeing? Just down there to say, go get them, fellas? No, he's in the middle of it. When this mob is doing its thing around the car, the expert says he's 18 inches from the door, according to what the diagrams show from the photographic evidence. 18 inches. He wasn't over on the sidewalk standing by his fiance's wheelchair and saying, stay here, honey. We'll stay out of the way. Let's just watch. I've got the AK in case somebody does something. No. He was being a tough guy, but he's also being an idiot, pushing his wife's or his fiance's wheelchair in the middle of a mob that wound up being within 18 inches of Daniel Perry's door. And you look at it and go, there's a whole lot of bad, there's like layers of bad decision-making here. And now somebody's dead. Well, John from Brownsburg has texted in. He says, has to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt to reaffirm your innocence, not to prove your innocence. More and more people are presumed guilty and have to prove otherwise. And he goes on to talk about something about, refuting a speeding ticket. He's right, though. In this case, it almost appeared that the grand jury was led to believe that guilt was there. Let's bring him in. Well, they did, and they got a conviction, which I'd like to know what they relied upon for the conviction in the most liberal venue in the entire state of Texas. But then on top of that, I look at it and go, dang, if there was ever a time for a governor to execute his rights by law to pardon, this may be it. All right, folks, enough of that one. Mob Rule will come up next. Tennessee Rough Cut. What is going on with the Tennessee 3? I'll tell you when we get back. Y'all stay tuned.